Good time of day, internet. It's me, your boy, Ben Taylor, the In Space Black Ranger. Back for the first time since the opener. That's not true. This is the first recording since the opener. I was technically on last week's episode with Brian, which is being recorded next week, which is great. There's a little peek behind the curtain for you all. And with me is the one, the only, the truly original Panther Red from head to toe. Our forever Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan.
The one and only.
And after definitely the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan.
That Marvel likes to hurt me with.
That is exactly how you are in my phone, too.
I'm okay with that. I'm also wearing purple today in your honor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Personally endorsed as our next Purple Ranger by Claire Blackwelder herself. That being said, we are here to review three very specific episodes today. The Kratorite Invasion, A Wasp of the Heart, and The Delta Discovery. Three quite interesting episodes for various different reasons. Not necessarily meaning that the episodes themselves are interesting. one last peek behind the curtain. If you've listened to any of my other episodes from this season, I always like to try and reach out to our friend Brian Massey to get a bit of an insight on what happened in the Sentai episodes, because Mega Ranger is so very different from In Space. However, we are recording this 2 days after Thanksgiving here in the US, and I absolutely forgot to ask him. So you are going to get a crib notes from my understanding of things when it comes to certain episodes. All right. So first of all, we are reviewing the Kratorite Invasion. What are your general thoughts on this episode?
This is the Boy Who Cried Wolf episode. That's how I have it written down. Yeah. That's it. That's the story.
Yeah.
We have this like cute kid who likes to tell tall tales, and God, this episode is bad. I could not with the kid, but
I could, like, yes, the kid's acting isn't great, right? But if I was a kid watching this, I could see this being super creepy. Like police officers being replaced by aliens, and like it's like half Boy Who Cried Wolf, half Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
All right, right? I'll give you credit there. I did like the body snatching aspect of it, especially when like Ashley opens the van and there's the guy tied up.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Oh, what's going on? What's happening?" He's like,
And is that really what is actually quite a cool cinematographer shot? Which is quite a change for Power Rangers, when the kid looks to his side and the police officer is reflected in the mirror, and the police officer is the police officer, but in the mirror, he's the
alien,
the Kratorite. Yeah. So this starts off with Ashley and TJ hitting up the In Space equivalent of a holodeck.
Yep.
And somehow the megaship gets hit by lightning in outer space.
Yep.
Which,
don't question it.
Sure.
There's a very simple explanation.
That's not how science works. Okay, we got both of our catchphrases out of the way at this point. We can carry on. And it leads to the Kratorites from the simulation becoming real, which is weird because there's like four Kratorites in the simulation, but then when they look outside, there's thousands of them parachuting down. Where did they get the parachutes?
And why do they look like menstrual pads?
Yes.
That's the real question out of this episode, is why do the parachutes look like menstrual pads?
They then take the gliders down and they're like, let's hit the center of Angel Grove and fan out. And then the next thing is they're walking down the street together and then they say the same thing. Let's split up, right? And In this scene, I do want to point out that the only thing I could focus on was Carlos's necklace, because it's like 6 inches wide. He's like wearing a neck brace or something. I don't know. It's like one of those seashell necklaces that everyone thought was cool back in the 90s, and some people I know still do. But it comes down to the fact that the Quaithwaite start replacing a bunch of people, and the only person he seems to notice is this kid who's been known for telling tall tales. And it really is pretty much a nothing episode. There is a cool moment at the end when all of the Quaithwaites kind of form together to make the monster.
Which is just one big
One big Quaithwaite
midnight.
made up of lots of Quaithwaites stuck together. But yeah. Yeah, there's not a whole lot to say about this episode, really.
There is this weird moment where Cassie and Carlos take the kid back to his house,
Yeah.
his apartment, and they say something like, he's like, but I don't remember the exact details of the conversation, but basically it's like,
I'm scared. He's like, I'm
right.
scared. Will you stay? And they're like, no,
We
trust in the
can't.
Power Rangers.
Right. But also it's like, oh, the Power Rangers will come, don't worry. And the kid's like, what do you mean they're telling, like, talk about telling stories. Like, the Power Rangers are gonna come. And I'm like, what do you mean? The Power Rangers save the city like once a week.
Like every other day at this point, right?
I mean, basically, so that was
Yeah.
kind of weird.
Yeah. So small notes on this episode when it comes to the Sentai side of things. There's no real counterpart for this episode. This episode came about because Power Rangers in Space decided to use Quantrons as their minions. And as such, they weren't using the Sentai foot soldiers, the Kunikuni,
Which are these crate
which
knife
are these
things?
what they call Quaithwaites here. So they decided to do this episode, which kind of cobbles together footage from episodes 1, 14, 19, 25, and 27 of the Sentai, kind of all the major highlights of the Kunikuni stuck into one episode. And that's kind of, other than the whole sort of boy who cried wolf thing, it's sort of the whole point of the episode is to just show some love to the foot soldiers of the Sentai, which is kind of cool, but absolutely not needed.
Yeah, but I guess it does kind of show how much they were able, like,
Yeah.
hilariously enough, you can't, I mean, you can sort of tell now that you're aware of it, that, like, okay, now it explains why there's, like, so many of them, because it was, like, probably Sentai footage from, like, an invasion episode or something like
Yeah.
that, so, like, you get it, but it is, like, really kind of a cool thing that they were able to splice so much footage from so many different stories into one episode without the
Yeah.
audience kind of questioning it too
Yeah.
much, which granted the audience is like 10-year-olds, but still.
Yeah. They did manage to turn it into somewhat of a cohesive narrative, right? One thing I will say is I really did like the fact that they tried to, and this is something that's going to come up in our next two episodes, not make Cassie the center of the episode. Because the episode before this was a Cassie-centric episode, and the next two
Next two
episodes are
episodes
kind
are
of
Cassie.
Cassie-centric episodes. I'd forgotten just how much of In Space is centered around Cassie. Even though what you remember is like the Ashley Andros romance and TJ being a complete boss, and but so much of the individual episodes is focused around Ashley Cassie. It's weird. But yeah, as again, I know we're not spending a whole lot of time on Crate Invasion because there's just nothing to it. Plus, I know that our next episode, Sash has got some thoughts on. So we're going to move on at this point to Wasp with a Heart.
I before we move on completely to Lost in the Heart,
Okay.
I do have one last note about
Yeah.
this episode, which is Bulk and Skull. So Bulk and Skull's
I've been
shtick.
trying to not talk. I nearly said a bad word there. I try not to realize that Bulk and Skull are in the first half of this season because I absolutely hate it. Like,
Here is
I
the thing.
talked a lot about in the episodes I was in Turbo, right? I talked a lot about the regression of Bulk and Skull,
Yeah.
right? We are back to full season one Bulk and Skull. They're just here for the slapstick at this point, characters.
Here's the thing, though. And I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking a children's cartoon, but then a children's show, but then again,
That's
this.
kind of our deal, yeah.
Right. But I will say, and I think this is something I noticed, especially in Wasp with a Heart, I think more because they're not in the next the Delta Discovery, which is that Bulk and Skull kind of could do a lot better if they weren't listening to Calamitous, which like his name should have been your first clue,
Right,
bros.
but they could, they did
But
it. Again, where you say that when I said the comparison to them going back to full season one, and you were like, but it was the same in season one. Whenever they actually applied themselves in season one, they did a lot, they did very good, which is why they started to evolve in seasons two and three and into Zeo, right?
maybe part of it is that we needed to sort of reestablish a status quo for the characters to some extent, but I do think it's
I don't know
don't
because they were
know.
reestablishing the status quo of them being doofuses in Turbo with the like unable to hold down a job and all of that stuff that was going on in Turbo. Look, just take my personal favorite episode, the Peter episode, right? They can't even read a map.
Yeah.
And rather than delivering the pizza, they eat it, right? We're back to season one. All the good work that was done of making them the junior police officers and all that, it just gets thrown away. And then in the second half of the season, it's like none of the degradation actually happened, and they come back towards the end. But that is, we will talk about that when we get to it. I just hate Bulk and Skull in like last season and the first half of this season.
Yeah, and at the end of the episode where they lose their clothes, it's just they're there for just comedic relief and
Yeah.
they don't actually add value to the episode. So, all
Yeah.
right, that's a fair point. So, I guess if that's the case, we can definitely move on to Us with a Heart.
Yeah, what's for the heart? One of what I think is a lot of people see this as a filler episode, right? But this is anything but. This very much ties into the story that we will be seeing later from Astronomer and Andros, which is nature versus nurture, right? One of the things that stopped happening around Zeo is we stopped seeing monsters getting created, right? Like we would always see Rita's making her putty monsters, and we'd see Zed turning things into monsters, and we would see that kind of thing. But in Zeo, we that kind of stopped happening. Like the monsters would just show up, and then so here we deal with a monster. I say a monster. Well, we deal with a monster called Sting King. And a much more reticent creature called Waspicable. There is some that's a A plus mwah, chef's kiss, typical Zordon era like monster name, right? Waspicable. But Waspicable just wants to like pick
He wants to
flowers,
be
and
a
he
bumblebee.
wants to be a, he wants to be, he's like at one point he's like, I wish I was a bee. Like he just wants to go and smell flowers and hang out and be normal. But he's a 6 foot tall wasp that can shoot lasers out of his eyes. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this episode.
I really love this episode, partially because, like you said, it's establishing this question of is evil, like, are you naturally evil? It also sets up a question of who's really in charge here. And so this episode, so Astronema thus far has, and maybe I'm misremembering, has operated with relatively unchecked, like, she's got things she needs to do, but Dark Spectre's been kind of like, I trust you, girl. Like, you're my heir apparent. You are my protege. Like, you go, girl. I got you. But this episode actually establishes several things. Number one, it brings up the nature of good and evil.
Yeah.
Number two, it shows that Astronema is in no way safer position than Rita was, than Divatox was. And if anything, she's on much thinner territory because Dark Spectre expects more from her than he did from everybody else.
Yes.
So there's a lot of pressure mounting on her. Like, he's holding her responsible. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait,
This is some of the stuff we dealt with Discovery.
I'm sorry. All right, I take it back.
But what is interesting here is we are getting the first sort of face-to-face interactions between Astronema and the Rangers in person, right? Short of the whole thing in the first episode where Andros is at the dinner, right? This is kind of the first time in the American footage that Astronema, Ecliptor, and the Rangers are all kind of in the same place.
Yes.
Or all the Rangers, should I say.
Yes.
And there's this very nice little moment of tension between them when they're all in the same place. But to go through the story, it starts with Waspicable just sort of like smelling flowers in the park.
Just having a good time.
Saying that he likes the color yellow. Sting King shows up and is like, okay, time to get to work. You're actually a monster. Hits him, lasers shoot out of Waspicable's eyes when he gets hit and blows up a boulder or something. And Ecliptor is there. And they basically step him out to kind of attack a there's like a situation that happens. I think it's just like he attacks like a kid's party or something. I can't remember.
That I think happens in the latter half of the episode, but basically Skull and Professor Calamitous are out in the woods, and Professor Calamitous is like, here, I found an alien pod. And Skull is like, this is a wasp nest.
The moment that made me, if it hadn't had my laptop and I would have flipped my table, because there's a moment at the end of this chase scene where Waspicable runs around the end of Calamitous's van, and Bulk, Skull, and Calamitous's trousers are stood straight up as if people are standing in them, and their shoes are on the floor. And admittedly, it's a great one line of like scaring the pants off them, right? But then you scan like 3 feet left, and they're stood there in their boxers. And I'm just like, this is a PG podcast, so I can't use the words I want to use. But I was so, so angry. This is bottomed out, back to the worst of the worst, Bulk and Skull. And I just, especially knowing where they'll be in like 30 episodes time.
I will say there is an interesting moment right when they're confronted by Waspicable, where they're sort of cornered and Bulk and Skull kind of like grab Calamitous and they run out, all three of them. So it is a regression, but it's still like, you know, if we're talking like really, really OG Bulk and Skull, they would have hightailed it like just by themselves without a thought or care for anybody else. So at least it's something. So that's where Cassie shows up, and there's this like there's a fight where Cassie tries to like the monk Waspicable basically gets her little like
The
what do you call it,
satellite
satellite
stunner or
blaster,
whatever it's
battle
called,
laser, and he tries to shoot her, but he can't. And then the other ranger shows up, and Cassie actually stands up against her friends to protect this monster. Like, no, he had the chance to hurt me, and he didn't.
Other than all the pick, can't pick, kicks and punches and throws and
I mean, look, we draw the line at murder. And right after this moment, I actually have my note that says, like, oh, duh, this episode basically foreshadows Astronema. And we've talked a lot about how like previous seasons don't really do that sort of thing.
It's something I brought up in the very first episode that we recorded for the season, in the season opener. One of the strengths that In Space has that all of the other episodes of the seats of the all the other seasons of the Zordon era didn't have is it has like an internal structure. It has a skeleton. It has an overall arc. Previously, it was just like the arc was the first episode where the bad guy shows up, then the last episode where they kill the bad guy or they beat up the bad guy because the Power Rangers literally never win until In Space. And even then, that's debatable because they have to kill Zordon to do it.
It's a bittersweet victory.
It's one that involves murder. I mean, let's be honest.
Assisted suicide.
Anyway, so In Space, however, has that internal thing of looking for Zordon, which we'll get to in the next episode. It has the whole figuring out what they can do, how they can do it, and there's this gradual build up of the arc. Which I think is something that very much helps In Space with its internal structure. And there are episodes like this that so many fans I know dismiss as like just another filler episode. And when you're actually watching it, you're like, hello? Foreshadowing?
A lot of the episodes that we do see are episodes that help even the quote unquote filler episodes, right? Like they're more character building episodes, or they're episodes that, you know, keep them looking for Zordon, things that make sense for the narrative. So it's not just like, we're just gonna toss this episode for whatever. I would even argue, you can argue that the and maybe this is overthinking because we take a kid's show way too seriously, but the Creed Net episode also, you can maybe make the argument that it's about the question of like people aren't what they seem and there's more things to them. Like I said, it's a stretch. It's a stretch. But there's still these like little things that could fit in. But what's interesting is after this encounter, Waspicable doesn't, he's like not magically like a perfect beacon of goodness. He actually still tries to do bad
Yeah,
things.
because he's it basically, long story short, he's being peer pressured into doing it by Ecliptor and Sting King.
Say no to peer pressure, kids.
Peer pressure is bad. Unless that peer pressure is to do cool things.
Like
Like
start a pod, like continue a podcast about
continue
Power
to
Rangers.
do a podcast about Power Rangers. Or I don't know, help the needy or something. I don't
There
know.
you go. But yeah, so he
I was doing a
tries
thing there and it got completely derailed.
so he tries to be bad, but he can't. And Ecliptor basically is like, okay, this is ridiculous. You're a monster. You're gonna go destroy a kid's birthday party. And he and the Quantrons show up and ruin a little girl's
They
birthday party.
literally like Ecliptor doesn't just say go do. He literally throws him like they're stood on the other side of the bushes from this birthday party. There's Sting King, there's Ecliptor, there's a bunch of Quantrons, there's Waspicable. And Ecliptor just grabs him and throws him and goes, go.
That's how I threw my brother into his first job.
So funny. And then, like, he's trying so hard, getting so far, but in the end, it doesn't really matter because he just sort of wants to be a good guy. And he sees the Quantrons beating Cassie up. And oh, we should mention that Cassie's the like one of like three adults at this kid's birthday party. We don't know why she's at the birthday party. She just is. She doesn't seem to know any of the kids. She's just there.
She seems to know the birthday girl because after the party's over and the balloons come back and everything, she's like, "See, look, your balloons are back." I don't know. Maybe she moonlights as a party planner. Okay.
Maybe.
It added to the list of all of the hobbies that Rangers have had over the course of the last, however many seasons.
Yeah.
But I will say my one real nitpick about the episode is they say the concept like, "Oh, you're a monster with a heart," like one too many times.
Yeah.
Like you could have said it once, but they say it like three times over the course of the episode. And it's one of those things where like it's not necessary at all because they've already shown us that. They don't have
Right.
to say it.
It's not necessary for 40-some-year-olds who are overanalyzing a kid show. But when you are, as you said in the last episode, playing to children, you got to hammer the moral home.
Yes, but I feel like they could have at least changed up the way that they say it.
Well, I think at least once it's waspicable remembering Cassie say it. So it makes sense that it's
Okay, fair
worded the
enough.
same.
Fair enough.
Right. My nitpick with this episode is the varying power levels of the Rangers, right? Because in episode one, end of episode one, beginning of episode two, we see the Rangers trying to fight Quantrons and just not being able to. And then in like earlier episodes this season, they have to morph to fight Quantrons, right? And then in this episode, Cassie's just happily beating up Quantrons unmorphed
She
until she
happily.
gets overwhelmed by numbers,
Well, you
right?
could argue that they're training. Like, we literally saw them do like simulated trainings in the previous episode. So maybe that helps enhance their power levels, which also reflect their efficiency in civilian life.
Or it's the Power Rangers thing of narrative convenience.
Mean, yeah, that's probably it, but I like my
Because,
explanation better.
well, no, you can't say that, right? Because in Mighty Morphin, Billy couldn't fight when he was more when he wasn't morphed in the earlier seasons, but he could fight when he was morphed. Same with Kimberly, right? So even though they were training, they still didn't. So I don't know. Yeah.
I guess it's a, I mean, don't forget also that like, these guys were these were the second Turbo Rangers, and Quantrons and Piranitrons are a little bit different. And they do have these new powers that they've, accumulated. So it, I guess it makes maybe a little bit more sense, but I get where you're coming from on it. I will say there is something really
It's
weird in
just
this.
something that has bothered me, and it's something that bothers me about Power Rangers just in general, is they just don't seem to have a consistency to them. Like, one of the things that we noticed that happened a lot through Turbo, right, is the Rangers, even against the Piranitrons, had problems because that's something that happened in Car Ranger, because Car Ranger was more of a silly comedy season, right? Whereas here, we are using a lot of American footage. Like, the Quantrons don't exist in Mega Ranger. So I think they could have had a bit more internal consistency to it.
Fair point. I will say that overall, the Waspicable's journey kind of doesn't end in this episode. It sort of starts. But there is something really weird in this episode, and I don't know if you picked up on it, but partway through this episode, Astronomer shows up. And she has this like really weird look on her face during this entire thing with Waspicable, and I don't know what is happening. Now, is it because the pressure's mounting on her? Is it because she's seeing something that she doesn't quite understand? Like, what's going on with Darth Specter's Girl Friday here?
Well,
Like,
I think part of it is Melody Perkins being able to act as well as my coffee cup. And that's her attempt at performing that she's seeing something that's touching her a nerve in, like, because as you say, astronomer seeing someone who is not acting the way that they are expected to act, right? And as we've said, this is foreshadowing what we will know about Astronomer later in the season. So I think this is Melody Perkins's attempt to communicate that there's a little bit of foreshadowing going on, but what she's actually doing is looking like she has gas. I apologize, you were drinking there.
I gotta stay hydrated. I have a cold. That's you're not wrong. Yeah, it caught me, and I just have like I have Astronomus face. What even is it?
Yes.
That is a literal note I am reading from my notes here.
So we're going to I do want to talk a little bit about the, as I said, talk a bit about the Sentai equivalent episode. This is another where there isn't an actual kind of equivalent episode, which is something that you're going to hear a lot this season because, as we covered in the opener, Mega Ranger is so very different from In Space because it's all about computer games and stuff, right? So this episode, as I said, it doesn't really have an equivalent. But most of the Sentai fight footage comes from the seventh episode of Mega Ranger called What's This? The Clingy Bothersome Girl, where Mega Yellow, Chisato, helps the Mega Black, I forget his name, get a girl who has become obsessed with him to leave him alone. I'm not sure what that's got to do with wasps and bees,
There's a
but
very simple explanation.
yeah. But what I did want to say, and it's so very noticeable in this episode when they switch from Sentai footage to American footage, how much worse quality the Sentai footage is. It's really different.
Well, it was also very much noticeable last season with Turbo, but
Right, but like
yeah.
the, like if you compare this to when you're switching to like the with like the Craterite episode that we just reviewed, it's not nearly as
That's
noticeable, is it?
true, yeah.
But yeah, I think Wasp of the Heart is one of my favorite episodes of the season, just because of just because of the messages it lays out.
I also really like the voice modulation that they used on Waspicable. It made it sound like alien-y without being as annoying as I found the voices on the Equation Rangers.
Yeah, and it also allows some amount of acting, right?
And you can tell like the way that like wh whoever the voice actor was for Waspicable, there's like these gradients in the voice, and there's some like tactile
10
chain
marks, apparently.
props to them. Because there's definitely some like, I don't know what you call it, like layering. Like you can
Yeah.
feel the deep emotion and the conflict that this essentially, like you can feel the emotion that the character goes through, even though you can't read their expressions at all.
Yeah.
So,
There's
like,
a
really well
lesson that
done.
Sam Raimi should have learned in the first Spider-Man movie.
But-ups. Shots fired here, folks.
Bang bang. But yeah, I really enjoy this episode. I don't know whether I mentioned this, but this is the first time we see a clip door in the American footage, and it's quite clear that they've like done a touch-up job on the armor because it's way sharper and kind of more angular than you see in some of the other shots.
Very true.
All right. So let's move on to the Delta Discovery, which, while, and this is something I mentioned earlier. All right, we're back after a bit of a technical blibble there. And we are moving on to the Delta Discovery. I mentioned this before, but this is one of those episodes that is considered one of the arc episodes because of kind of what happens in it. What happens in it is kind of a nothing. But we do start out on a planet called Hercuron, I think it's what it was
Yeah,
called.
that's what it was.
Where we have the return of the best villain of the Zordon era, Divatox. Not the best version of Divatox, but Divatox nonetheless. And she is sort of babysitting Zordon's tube as it slowly fills with love. Like, bear in mind, we're like 11 episodes into the season at this point, and the lava hasn't
Literally.
moved. And hasn't moved. Right? Like, since where we saw it in episode one, it's not moved. This is some slow-moving lava, right? Even by lava standards. So yeah,
It's a very slow
Divatox.
acting poison.
Yeah. The poison. The Zordon. Zordon's poison. Pull the lever, Elgar. Wrong lever.
Elgar also appears in this episode, much to everyone's
Actually,
annoyance.
he was in the end of the last episode as well, where she was like, "No more insect monsters," and then there's like three more across the rest of the season. Because Elgar does his job real good. But yeah, Divatox and her team are babysitting Zordon's tube, and the Phantom Ranger is watching them. Dum dum dum. Long story short, he goes invisible. Piranatron sees him anyway.
Well,
But
Divatox sees him first as he
no.
goes.
Piranatron turns around and clocks that he was there, and then tells Divatox that he
Yeah.
was there. Like, there's just no point this guy ever going invisible because it never does anything for him.
Like invisible, or is he just like blending into his surroundings? Because those are two different
Yeah,
things.
it's
This
true.
gives the way that they do the effect, it feels much more like he's blending into the surroundings. So you can like see a shadow move versus like actually going invisible.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think they actually did it better in Turbo.
Yeah. They did a lot of things better in Turbo, mainly Divatox.
But when he goes invisible twice, the second time is in the middle of the fight because he's being overwhelmed by the Piranatrons.
Three times.
Or three times. Three times?
Yeah, because he also goes invisible to run past Divatox, and she goes,
That's,
"Look at it." He
oh,
goes that way.
yeah, that's what I'm, that's the second time.
Oh, okay.
So Divatox, so he goes invisible or he like chameleonizes himself and then he runs away and you can see Divatox turning her head over it, like he went
She
that
just
way.
tracks him identically. She's like, "Yep, yeah, yep, yeah, there he is."
Like, what is the point, bro? Like, come on.
But he records a message, informing the Power Rangers that Zordon is on this planet. And instead of like just getting rid of, like shooting it instantly, he goes to do this like big pose thing in order to shoot it. And invariably he gets surrounded by Piranatrons.
And they struggle for the
Surprise.
weapon, and then he manages to grab his hand and pull it
Oh, he
free from
drops
the.
it. He drops it at first,
Yeah, I
and that's
know.
when like the like something happens, and then he grabs it and shoots it anyway.
Yeah,
And that's
but
kind of the end of the arc part, right? This is just an excuse for new Zords.
it's a cool Zord.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's really not.
It's not. It's bad. This is bad. Anyway, the
But
point being, the Power Rangers show up to Herculon.
it
Phantom
takes
Ranger
them like
goes.
actually, so they, funny enough, before we get there,
Yeah.
the Rangers get the distress signal
Yeah.
that the Phantom Ranger sets up. But until about 7 minutes in, other than that one clip, we don't actually see the Rangers. So 7 minutes is a lot in an episode. So there's like half an episode essentially that
Yeah,
really
but we've
doesn't
got
happen.
Diva Talk, so it's fine.
No. I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. It's just it's a narrative
Yeah.
choice where the
Yeah.
focus largely of this episode isn't even really on the Rangers until the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they do show up, he's just like, oh, you
Just missed
just
him.
missed them. Which makes me think, wouldn't they have seen the other ship leaving the planet as they were coming in?
Unless they went from like the other side. It's very unclear how things work in this in the space
In
travel part of
space,
this.
yeah.
Well, because there is a note of like, so the Rangers show up and the Phantom Ranger basically tells them like, oh, like Ecliptor's gone or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, can we track Ecliptor's ship? And I guess they zoomed out of here at warp speed and Mach 9 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't track them.
Sure.
But interestingly enough, though, they don't realize, and neither does the Phantom Ranger, that Ecliptor doesn't have Zordon. Divatox does.
Yes.
So this is an interesting choice where the audience actually knows more than the Rangers do, which like we do
Yeah.
for a lot of this.
Yeah.
But so Dark Spectre shows up. Because Astronema is there and he's like, no, Astronema, go distract the Rangers and attack the Earth. And Divatox is taking Zordon wherever the hell she's taking him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of gets under Astronomer's skin a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because my girl Divatox is being trusted a bit more than she is.
I did rename this episode. This is the Phantom Rangers No Good, Very Bad Day.
Yeah.
He's not doing well today.
Except he is. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Like
So,
Ecliptor, like actually like
yeah, he gets a nice cut on him. So as the Rangers are getting ready to go back to defend Earth, Phantom Ranger's like, hey, take this disc. It will activate the Delta Zord, the Delta Flyer, or whatever it's called.
Delta Megaship.
Delta Mega Ship. Delta Flyers from Voyager.
Yes.
So much Delta, so little
All
time.
the sci-fi blending in.
So Andros goes off to do that, and run around the inside of what is quite clearly a naval battleship for about 5 minutes. The other four run off to go fight.
Jaws meets Crocodile Dundee.
The other four run off to fight Crocovile, another A plus name, Z quality monster. Which is basically just a big crocodile.
Yes.
And before they left, Phantom Ranger was like, you will need this. How does he know? He's never known. He doesn't know he doesn't know what monster's being sent to Earth.
He just knew that this monster was going to be like extra difficult and extra crocodile-y.
He didn't. That's
No,
the
he
thing.
didn't. He just had a
Did
new
he mean
toy
they'll
for
need it in
kids.
the long term? Maybe.
Yes. It's just
But
look, the Phantom Ranger knew that the kids needed a new toy,
yeah.
okay? That's all there is
So
to
at this
it.
point, the story kind of splits in two. There's
Yep.
Andross going off to find the Delta Megaship, and then there's the other four going back to Earth to fight Crocovile. We will start by going to the Delta Megaship because it is a very simple story. There's just a big giant ship hanging out in space doing nothing. There's no one there. No clue as to who constructed it, why it's there, how it got there.
I kind of assumed that the Phantom Ranger arrived on it, but I guess not, because he just kind of gives it to Andros.
But it's got all of the like shipyard rigging around it. Like, it's just been built.
Oh, you're right.
So he goes inside this thing. And at this point, the Phantom Ranger's like, I will guide you when you get there. And he reveals that he's got this big cut on his side from where he was fighting Ecliptor. And it's like, dun, dun, dun. And all the way through this sequence, the Phantom Ranger is getting weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. To the point where he gets to the end, and Andross is like, which drive do I need to put this disc into? And the Phantom Ranger physically can't move or speak. And Andross guesses. And
50-50 shot.
Yeah. Some chucklehead, when they were building this Delta megaship, went, you know what would be a really good idea? Making the boot up sequence seem like self-destruct. Because that's a great idea, isn't it? So for about 10 seconds, we get this countdown of what looks like he's chosen the wrong drive.
Yes.
And it looks like the ship's about to self-destruct. But then it's just like, boot up complete. And he's like, oh, it worked. At which point he gets his Battleizer. That for the first time is called a Battleizer, I think. But also,
yes,
doesn't instantly affect the way a Ranger fights. It is just to control the Delta Megaship.
For now.
For now. Back on Earth, the four Rangers have fought the Crocovile on the ground, handily beaten it up. The mega lasers have been fired. The Crocolisk has grown. The Crocovile has grown. And the Astro Megaship has been summoned. The Astro Megaship is handily beating up the Crocovile, hits it with the Astro Mega Saber, and now there's two of them. There's no readout of increase in power level. There's no readout of extra weapons. There's just now two of them. And all of a sudden, the Astro Megaship, the Astro Megazord, that was absolutely handling the Crocovile like it was its job, suddenly is being overpowered like it was a jobber in WWE. Which makes no sense. None. Like, even if there was a single thing about there's two of them and their power is increased, no, there's just two of them now.
I wasn't crazy. I thought I had missed something in my rewatch. It's like, wait, where'd the second one come from?
Oh, the second one came from when it got hit by the Astro Mega Saber. And amoebas wanted their gimmick infringement back, and it just split in two.
Got it.
And one of them had a tail, and one of them now has a chompy hand.
Sure. It's Power Rangers. Don't question it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So they defeat the monsters. Yeah, all
the Astro
the
Mega Ship shows up, has Gatling gun hands. The Delta Mega Zord shows up, has Gatling gun hands.
Did you ask Brian about the Sentai footage for this one? Because I have a question.
So I didn't actually get to ask Brian about any of this.
Or did you happen to look it up?
Yeah, I have done some research, yes.
Because I thought it was very random. And, like, not that I have anything against Carlos, but I do find it interesting that he kind of ended up taking charge in the Zord fight.
Yeah.
And I was curious if that just had to do with the Sentai footage or not.
Pretty much.
Okay. Guessing it was probably like a Black Ranger focused episode.
Yeah. So, long story short, there is no counterpart episode. There is a counterpart episode, but again, it's mainly just the fight footage from episode 20 called "Counting on You," the new Robo Delta Mega, which is an even worse name than Delta Mega Ship. But yeah, it's. Sorry, there's just explosions going on in my house.
Fine.
Yeah, just it's. But it is worth noting that Crocovile isn't the biggest enemy the Rangers face in this episode. The biggest Rangers enemy the Rangers face in this episode is really phoned in ADR dialogue. All of the ADR dialogue when they're like in their suits or talking in the Zord or anything the Phantom Ranger ever does is so phoned in. So phoned in. Anyway,
It's funny.
they defeat Crocovile.
Yes.
We will come back to the ADR in a minute because I know you might have an opinion on it. They defeat Crocovile. And they go back to the planet where the Phantom Ranger was, and he's just gotten up and walked off. The person who couldn't move or speak about 3 seconds of 30 seconds of screen time ago got up, walked off, and is now in his spaceship pursuing Zordon to the other side of the galaxy.
There's a very simple explanation.
Poor writing.
Well, look, they couldn't kill the Phantom Ranger. They just kind of had to get him to pass out until a life pack could like
Why
flow down
not?
and like insta-heal him.
Why not? It would give more focus to Cassie.
Well, Cassie does get a little bit extra, like there's like a
Right, but
little
if the Phantom Ranger was dead, she'd get to try and act again. That's
You're
probably why they
so
didn't do it.
mean. You're
Probably
so
why they didn't
mean.
do it. Damn. But
But
yeah.
yeah, so the Phantom Ranger is fine. He tells them that he's like gonna continue searching for Zordon. The Rangers are like, okay, cool, guess we're gonna go now. But there's a little extra message for Cassie.
Yeah, and she's like, no, I'm okay.
I'm sure that this relationship will be explored and definitely elaborated on in the rest of this
100%,
series.
100% the most interesting thing that will ever happen in Power Rangers. Now we get to the point that you referenced a little bit earlier,
Yes, I jumped the
where
gun.
we reach what is the qu pretty much the quarter point of the season. Because the episode's 43, 44 episodes, and we're at the
Yes.
end of the 11th episode. And this is the point where Dark Spectre has lost his patience, basically, and is like, yo, astronomer, girl, you have to do better, right? And she's like, but I'm doing better. And he's like, nah. And she's like, uh-huh. And he's like, nah. She's like, uh-huh. He's like, no, we're not getting into a thing.
That is exactly word for word how it was in the episode. 100%. You can trust us. But yeah, Dark Spectre is kind of like, he's like, I put you in charge and I can definitely get rid of you. Like, remember your place here.
Like he literally says, I will squash the Dark Fortress as you sleep.
Yeah.
And then just never does that.
He gets very busy. Yeah, I
Spectering
don't know.
things.
I got nothing. It does seem like Dark Spectre's powers, as we'll find out later in the seasons, they're also kind of like he's sort of limited anyway, and
Yeah.
there'll be further limits placed on those powers later. But man, I kind of want a Dark Spectre origin story now.
It's the Turbo movie.
But that was
Same person.
Malago.
And
But not the same character.
same person.
But not the same character.
Same
It's the
person.
same suit. Doesn't mean anything.
I will, like, yeah, but to go back to the ADR, right? Because it you kind of, because the ADR from Dark Spectre is really well done, right? And even some of the ADR that astronomers doing here, because some of our stuff is ADR'd because of the whole like filming outside kind of thing, is good for astronomer. I think I made my Phoenix plain about her when we were talking about Wasp or Heart. But the Ranger and Phantom Ranger dialogue in this one is so phoned in. I don't know whether they recorded it wrong or whatever, but whoever was ADR director for this episode, so bad. So bad.
But overall, I mean, these three episodes were a lot of fun. They kept like the pace was decent overall, with maybe the fight was like a little bit long-winded, but it kind of had to be a little bit, because you need to establish like the Zord fight with the monsters, that you have to establish the Delta Megazord coming in. So like it makes sense. And they do kind of get us thinking about sort of what is the nature of good and evil, and what's the end game here for Astronema and Dark Spectre? Like, is it to just destroy the Earth and kill Zordon? Like, were they just like, this seems like a lot of effort and a lot of people just to invade one planet. Just saying. Just saying.
Yeah, it's interesting because, well, they kind of speak about it in the banquet at the beginning of the season, where it's like we're trying to take over the galaxy, right? And that's kind of what the Evil League of Evil is all about. I know
The
it's not quite.
United Alliance of Evil, the
I know that.
UAE.
Yes, the Evil League of Evil. Legally distinct from the United Arab Emirates. They just don't think. Anyway, I do want to also point out that I was quite critical in the opener, the very first episode of the season, about how much Astronomer as a character overacts and chews the scenery.
That's
And
what makes
yes,
her great.
now that I am well aware that I have said that my favorite villain of the Zordon era is Divatox, who does something very similar. The difference being, Divatox does it well. And having them both in the same episode really highlights the difference between the two.
Well, because I think part of it is like Divatox is a space pirate. Like you're first of all, the concept of a space pirate is already ridiculous enough. And the way that both actresses played Divatox was just like they made her very eccentric and over the top from the beginning. With Astronema, I think part of it is we don't really get her shtick other than the fact that she's Dark Spectre's heir apparent. So she doesn't have a theme in the same way that Rita does, or because Rita's a space witch and Divatox is a space pirate. She's just a space bad guy.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about like just ability of the person to who is playing the character
That's also
to
true.
overact in a way that is,
Fitting.
when it comes to Divatox, entertaining and the kind of over the top that you want, right? Whereas Astronomer's actress is over the top in a way that is, I don't know how to act, so I'm just going big. Right?
Fair point. Fair
And having
point.
them both in the same episode really highlights the difference between the two. But
And we're
yeah.
not going to get too much more. I mean, Divatox appears. I'm trying to remember. She appears at the end. She might show up in another one-off somewhere. But I don't remember any other Divatox astronomy interactions until the end.
Yeah, not really. Not
I
really.
actually kind of would want to see like just Divatox and Astronema in a room together, just like going at
Yeah, I kind of
it.
would too.
Like just because of like the ridiculousness of both characters just shining through, would be interesting to watch.
It's like Diva Tox is in like one more episode in like 7 episodes ish time, and then she's in the finale. She's only in like 5 episodes of In Space, I think.
Yeah, because I remember her from the because the opening, this episode, and then the end, but I don't remember if there's anything
There's one
later.
more episode. I think it's she seemed
Oh,
very briefly when Justin comes back.
I was, yep, that makes sense.
But yeah, that was a very quick episode by all comparisons.
Yeah.
But at the same time, while the episodes occurred, there was very little to actually sort of talk about outside of like Wasp of the Heart's themes and what we saw kind of at the end of the Delta Discovery. Also, why is it called the Delta Discovery when they don't discover it, they're told where it is? That's not how words work.
I
Yeah. All right.
get
Anyway, yeah, just bad, but yet not.
Like these episodes sort of, 'cause I think what these episodes do, I mean, like the first one was kind of filler, and the next two just, they kind of progress. They let us know what the themes and progressions of the story are sort of
Yeah,
going to,
they
which is like
tote,
Zordon and the
yeah.
nature of good and evil. But other than Wasp of the Heart, like the last episode, like nothing really happens for the Rangers other than they get a new toy.
Well, I mean, Cassie gets some stuff to deal with, right? Because
Bit that.
she's very clearly still into this Phantom Ranger guy, even though she's been going on dates, as we saw 3 episodes, like literally the episode before Kratorite invasion. She is all about her being on a date with a guy.
Well, look, the Phantom Ranger's kind of unavailable. So, like, what do you want from her? Pining only gets you so
A
far.
brain,
And
common sense. Human decency,
but
loyalty. No, okay.
they're not dating. They're just friends, and she has a slight crush on him. There is no indication of anything, and we know it doesn't go
Other than
anywhere,
he
so.
thinks at the end of the episode to leave a very special message just for her to say,
He likes her.
I'm okay.
He likes her. She likes him, but they're not together.
Then that's what I want, for them to codify the damn relationship so
Yeah,
that they're not just.
because romance is always so well written in Power Rangers, like, compared to like, you know, everything else in Power Rangers
I
that is
didn't
like,
say
you
do it good, I just said do it.
spoiler
At
alert, they won't.
no point did I say good.
Well, they're not doing anything badly either. They're just kind of, I wonder
Yes, which is
if,
the problem?
well, we'll get to that the next time the Phantom Ranger shows up.
Hopefully not, because I hopefully won't be involved. I don't know if I am at this point. I nearly didn't want to do these episodes, right? And I was like, but I really want to do Wasp of the Heart. But I don't. But I do. But I
Because
don't.
Wasp of the Heart is awesome.
But I
But look,
do.
all things
But then
considered,
I'd completely forgotten that Diva Tox was in this episode. So I was like, bonus.
there you go. And at least it's not Turbo.
Yeah.
Our bar is low here, folks, but
Solo.
here we
Solo.
are.
Yeah, we are realizing at this point that we are very close to the end of the Zordon era. Very close to the end of the Zordon era. And we're gonna do it. We're gonna get through it. So that we'll just kind of wrap it up there. Overall, 3 episodes of Power Rangers, that one of which exists, the other two kind of would, they toe the line of the plot. They sort of push the plot along very, 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 very small. One of which is somewhat intentionally that way. The other one is just sort of like in what is really unusual for Power Rangers, does it in a really subtle, understated, foreshadowing-y way, which makes me think it wasn't intentional whatsoever. Overall, Sasha, your thoughts on these three episodes?
I mean, I didn't really like the first one. I will say you changed my mind a little bit, gave me something to like a little bit more about the first episode. But overall, I think the last two help move the story. Like you said, they help move the story forward just enough to make it like kind of pass from us calling it like completely pointless and filler. And Wasp of the Heart is this was the episode I demanded to be on. Because I love this episode and because it really like starts a lot of other things going that you can then kind of come back to. So I'm glad I got to review these episodes with you, Ben.
It's fun when the two of us get to be together on these episodes because we are probably the two most snarky members of the group. And it's nice to not have to be really snarky about episodes. Which has been really rare over the last 5 seasons. Which is kind of cool. But yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. Sasha, where can people find you on the interwebs?
What's that? Never heard of it.
No.
No. So you can find me on Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky at the Jewish Comics Queen. Just ramblings about Jewish representation and comic books and pop culture randomness. And maybe an occasional Power Ranger note or two. Check me out. Ben, what about you?
You'll find me doing the video game thing over at 321 underscore TV on Twitch. You can also find me on socials at Blue Sky. I'm at Bob T Goldfish. And on Mastodon at Bob T Goldfish. And I use the I'm on the kind.social server. So yeah, you can find me there. You can find everything about this show over at VFTG underscore PR on Twitter. There's like a link tree you can go to there that links you to websites, other social media sites.
We're on Instagram now.
We're on Instagram and
We have a Facebook page.
think we're
We've
on
entered
Blue
the 20.
Sky as well. But we're expanding our reach into, I don't know, at least two more places.
We're slowly taking over.
Yeah, finally. But we will leave you, as we always do, at least when I'm hosting, with the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, by saying, guys, gals, non-binary pals, and all of those beyond that spectrum, please be excellent to each other. Adios, my friends.
And may the power protect you.
He.